Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
Six on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show. Lots going on. Of course, we have investigation madness in Washington, D.C., walkouts all across the country. Got all kinds of things to talk about. Thank you very much, by the way, to David Zanotti for filling in for me yesterday. Have you seen the conversations? Have you seen the walkouts? Have you seen the 14,000 children's shoes that were laid out on the Capitol lawn to honor lives lost to gun violence? That is where we begin today, because it's all, of course, a part of the media narrative, which is what we're seeing today. 7,000 pairs of children's shoes were lined up on the southeast lawn of the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, yesterday, in memory. Now, this is important. In memory of every child who has died due to gun violence. And, of course, this is all done by some advocacy group. The 7,000 shoes in the, quote, Monument for Our Kids installment represent, yes, indeed, every child that was killed by gunfire since the deadly shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, back in 2012. Now, here's the thing. What they're clearly trying to do is they're trying to make it seem like there have been 7,000 second graders, third graders, first graders gunned down due to gun violence. Now, one of the questions that I immediately asked, and I did a lot of Googling on this story, and I couldn't find any clarification as to how many of those pairs of shoes actually belong to gangbangers. How many of those shoes belong to people involved in the sale of drugs? How many of those pairs of shoes were belonging to folks that simply made the wrong choices in life? Yeah, maybe they're 16, 17 years old, but maybe they had indeed made those wrong choices. So when we talk about, and this is all part of the narrative, folks, and you know this, because the media and the left and all these students that are walking out or did walk out today, one of the things that you have to look at is, of course, what the media is trying to sell you, what the politicians and Nancy Pelosi and some of these folks are trying to sell you. But the bottom line is this. When you try to control what the truth is and people are able to, like a lot of you, are able to see through the lies, then they absolutely positively understand what it is that you're trying to pull over on the American people. And I think that the majority of people listening right now know what these walkouts are all about. Why? Well, because myself and Phil and Michael and Brian, we've all been talking about who's behind these walkouts. We've also been talking about what these walkouts are ignoring, because they're talking about gun violence, of course, and we all know that. But what they're ultimately trying to do, as we all know, is blame the gun. Meantime, what is not being discussed? Well, we all know what's not being discussed. What we all know is not being discussed is the issues of mental illness and so on and so forth. So when they talk about these 7,000 children's shoes, basically 14,000 total shoes being laid out, and they're trying to use this as some sort of an indicator as to how many, quote unquote, children have been killed by gun violence. That was my first question. OK, so how many of these were really innocent victims in so-called gun violence, as opposed to people that were making the wrong decisions in life? Now, and this is from go.com, but it's everywhere. One of the parents in attendance Tuesday was Tom Mauser, whose son was killed in the Columbine school massacre. He says, "I'll be traveling to D.C. literally wearing my son Daniel's shoes, the ones he wore the day he died at Columbine." Now, clearly his son and the kids at Columbine, the kids at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, the kids in Parkland, Florida, they were innocent victims. They were innocent victims, especially in Parkland, Florida. I'll just stick to that right now for the sake of this conversation. They were victims of a lot of things. The 17 people killed, 14 students and 3 adults, they were victims of a government that ultimately allowed them to be victims of this gun violence, in the sense that they put them in a gun-free zone so that anybody could come in with a gun, ignore the quote-unquote gun-free zone, and take out innocent lives. Also in attendance was Andy and Barbara Parker, whose daughter Allison was shot live on television. We remember this in 2015. while doing a news report for CBS affiliate station WDBJ in Roanoke, Virginia. We remember that story. It was a horrible story. Now, this particular activist group, they also say that some celebrities have been donating shoes as well, including Bette Midler, Susan Sarandon, Alyssa Milano, and Chelsea Handler. But for a lot of folks, a lot of the questions about regarding the narrative, what is the real answer? Well, we know what the real answer is, because when we talk about this, and again, air quotes, gun violence, and we talk about these 7,000 pairs of shoes, these 7,000 children that have been killed due to so-called gun violence over the years, well, as I just said, there's a lot of reasons why these 7,000 have been killed. And for every single protester and for every single person that focuses on the gun, then what you're not focusing on is what is truly the reason why a lot of these people lost their lives. These 7,000, as I said, gangbangers, drugs, making the wrong choices. Well, we all know that a lot of this has to do with a lack of parenting, no dads in the house, drugs, inner city violence. Those are the kinds of things that we really need to be talking about. But by focusing on the gun, they're not focusing on mental health. They're certainly not focusing on the missed clues and everything else that we've been talking about regarding the horrific, horrific tragedy that was the shootings in Parkland, Florida. So while it's an impressive picture, and I do understand what they're trying to do, what these activists are trying to do, at least for most people who understand and are able to go past the headlines and be able to really think of a deeper meaning behind these 7,000 pairs of shoes, the more you understand that there are more than just one issue, the more you realize that these activist groups and students and these politicians, they're only out for one thing, and we all know what that is. Now, we all know who David Hogg is. David Hogg is one of these students from Parkland, Florida. And he has been making the rounds. I've spoken about David Hogg before. He is suddenly become a cause celeb. He is a quote-unquote survivor of the shootings in Parkland, and he has been all over media and all over magazines, social media, you name it. And he's really been taking on politicians. He's really been taking on the NRA. He's really been taking on conservatives, President Trump, you name it, anybody who will listen. And he is screaming for gun control. Now, again, this is an example, and I would say a prime example, as a matter of fact, of a student who is being used as a pawn. And by the way, in case I haven't said it today, I've certainly said it in the past, all of those students that were walking out today, they were pawns. They're pawns from the activist groups. They're pawns for the media. They're pawns for the liberals. And we all know that, and we've been saying this for a long time. We all know who David Hogg is. This is a guy who has been really on the attack against conservatives. And so, Bella, I need some audio here, if you would. This is David Hogg on CNN. And the reason why I want to play this for you is because there are so many lies in this 1 minute and 13 second audio clip that I want to play for you. And the point is that Wolf Blitzer, because this is an interview from CNN, and Wolf Blitzer literally doesn't challenge him at all. They're just giving this guy unfettered access to their airwaves, to their audience. And he's basically saying lies. And there is absolutely no one that's there to challenge him. Listen, I'm going to talk a little bit about what he says in this minute 13 second clip, because there's a lot to demonstrate that he is not only being used as a pawn, but he's doing it very willingly.
Let me get your reaction. And first, let me start with you, David. What do you think of this latest proposal from the White House to create this blue ribbon commission run by the education secretary to study all these sensitive matters, including raising the age limit down the road?
I think it's a good step to make sure that we are taking action. I'm glad to see that. But I think it's also important to realize that Betsy DeVos basically paid for her position. She doesn't really have any experience in this area. She doesn't support public schools. She paid over $200 million just to get this title. And I think that she's not the right person for this.
Okay, so let's just go down the road. Go down that road for a moment. This is from redstate.com. This is a smear that originated with Bernie Sanders during the confirmation hearing for Betsy DeVos. Over a certain amount of years, her family donated $200 million to the Republican Party and Republican office holders, and that was enough to make the determination for liberals that she, quote-unquote, paid for her position. Now, Betsy DeVos herself only donated about $115,000 to Republicans since 1980. So for this guy, David Hogg, to come out with this accusation that she and her family cooked up this scheme to give $200 million over all these many years so that she could accept what they describe as a thankless position in government for a salary of $200,000 is absolute insanity. And Blitzer, he just lets him go on without so much as a challenge. But that tells you that this guy, David Hogg, he is clearly being fed his lines. Oh, and by the way, during this whole, I think you can see this on the Dan Mandy Show Facebook page. If you go to my page and you watch the video, he's reading off of, it's either cue cards or notes or something to that effect.
I think if we went to the DOJ and had a special commission that way, perhaps it'd be a better process to investigate these incidences and investigate them like almost an airplane crash, where we spend months on end researching how this stuff happened. And another thing is, we can't do that because the CDC...
Okay, so want to make sure you understand where he was going with this. So David Hogg says that... very much like when there's an airplane crash and they basically reconstruct the event, this is what we need to do for, say, for example, school shootings. There's so many different ways that you can look at an airplane crash. You can talk about how weather-related, mechanical, I mean, you name it. But it's almost like comparing apples and oranges. So I'm not exactly sure where he's going with this, but it does seem rather silly because we have done, and there have been, in-depth studies after in-depth studies after in-depth studies done on so many different aspects of so-called gun violence. So when he says, oh, we need to treat it like some sort of an airplane crash, we need to investigate it like that. Well, my own two cents on that is I don't really understand where he's going with that, but it's like, again, apples and oranges. He continues.
Months on end researching how this stuff happened. And another thing is we can't do that because the CDC isn't allowed to do research into these areas because of the Dickey Amendment. And because of the lobbying of the NRA on Trump.
No. The Dickey Amendment, and I looked this up because I've talked about this way in the past. But basically, he's got it all wrong. He does. The CDC, the Dickey Amendment is a provision that was first inserted as a rider into the 1996 federal government omnibus spending bill. And here's what it did. It mandated that, quote, none of the funds made available for injury prevention and control at the CDC may be used to advocate or promote gun control. In other words, the CDC is for disease control and prevention, right? It's not for politics and a push for gun control. Now, the issue these days is that they don't have a ton of funding. But the CDC has done its own investigation into gun violence back in 2015. But the argument is they needed the CDC to have dedicated funding to do it, not the funding coming from their general budget. But in other words, he's got it wrong. The CDC is allowed to look at gun violence. There just needs to be appropriate funding and very specific funding for it. So for him to say, for David Hogg to say, well, the CDC, quote unquote, isn't allowed to investigate these things because of the Dickey Amendment is another lie that, again, Wolf Blitzer, he's just allowing this to go on.
Into these areas because of the Dickey Amendment. And because of the lobbying of the NRA on Trump, I'm glad to see that he did take action and he seemed to take a lot of steps in the right direction. But then once he met with the NRA, he showed that he's no better than all the other politicians because he's owned by them, too. And it just shows the inaction because of this lobbyist organization that's continued to terrorize our children and hurt our future.
All right. So politicians and the NRA, they are terrorizing our children. It's to me anyway, it's almost laughable. It's almost like, OK, go ahead and read your press release on our airwaves to our audience for their overall larger narrative. And that is courtesy, again, of CNN and Wolf Blitzer. And they're just the mainstream media. They're just letting this guy talk unfettered, unchecked. But it's all part of the bigger game of the audience of CNN and a lot of these other mainstream media networks. They're listening to this. And what they're ultimately doing is they're accepting what this guy is saying as fact. And it's not. And Wolf Blitzer and those folks are letting him get away with it. And that's a problem. Because, again, and it goes back to the same thing I've been saying since literally the first or second day after the Parkland shootings, is that the more the lies that they tell, they're distracting from the larger issues of gun violence and mental illness. What the authorities missed, it goes on and on and on. Unfortunately, it's all about, as we all know, it's all about grabbing the guns. These kids are being used as pawns, and ultimately the thousands or millions of parents that encourage their kids to walk out of school today, certainly here in Williamson County, Rutherford County, Davidson County, you name it, all these students that were allowed to walk out of class. My question is this, because you, as you know, you are ultimately responsible for your kids' education. You are responsible for the discussion that you have with your kids. So my question to you would be, and yes, I did say this on Monday, my question is, what conversations have you had with your kids about the larger discussions well beyond the gun? Because I'm sure this whole conversation of walkouts must have come up during your family's private time. And if not, then you really should have brought it up. And it's certainly not too late. 1222 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandy Show.
I'm Pamela Furr. Student walkouts all across the country. I'll have the latest. And Edward Snowden doesn't care for the president's pick for the CIA. Okay. These stories and more in 1230 on WTN.
Let me tell you something. I don't have it in front of me now, doggone it, but the Trump's pick for CIA, what's her name? Doggone it, I don't have it in front of me, but she is actually, I think, very, very impressive. I'm going to talk about
extremely
that.
Extremely impressive.
She's
been with the department for
35 years.
She's like our, with the, I'm sure she's not bipolar, but she's like our Carrie Matheson.
Yes, that's exactly the comparison that people are making. And I think she is very good. Gina Haspel.
There you go.
Is her name. And there are a lot of people.
Clandestine services. That is a bad A.
That's,
you know,
right.
The Democrats are complaining she had to waterboard 25% more people to get considered.
I don't think torture is funny. Ah, see?
Okay,
see,
Mom.
See?
Wow. Gina Haspel ran a CIA black site prison in Thailand in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And she later played a role in the CIA's destruction of tapes and the interrogation sessions of terrorism detainees.
Yeah,
and so that's a rough one. So then the question is, was she just following orders or, you know, what's the story behind that? So now
but
a
she's
lot of,
still there. So obviously, you know.
Yeah. I like her. I mean, I really do.
I think it's a great move.
Yeah, I do too. And I love how the liberals are screaming about this. She's going to be the first female head of the CIA ever.
So, I know.
And clearly, she is somebody who's, at least to me, she's very qualified.
And President Trump did that as a misogynist.
That's right. And a sexist, too. Damn him. Anyway, so we'll talk about that and a whole lot more, because I think there are a lot of people, including John McCain, of course, who are really worried about Gina Haspel. So we'll talk about this and a whole lot more straight ahead on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 1236 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandy Show, 615-737-9986. 615-737-WWTN. Yeah, you know, not all Democrats are against Gina Haspel. I think this is going to be so fascinating to watch how this whole thing plays out. Now, she is President Trump's pick, a misogynist that he is and sexist that he is, to run the CIA. Now, this is a lady who has been in the CIA for some 35 years, and she is a longtime CIA veteran who is currently deputy CIA director. As we're talking about, she ran a CIA black site prison in Thailand in 2002. She later played a role, and this is where the controversy is going to be. She played a role in the CIA's destruction of tapes of the interrogation sessions of terrorism detainees. And so she was a part of this whole controversy regarding waterboarding. Now, human rights groups are pressing for the CIA to declassify her records in the program. But one of the things that a lot of folks are saying Is that really the only way that Haspel's nomination is in jeopardy? Is if she loses the support of Republicans, who, as we all know, hold a slim 51-49 seat majority in the Senate. But we do have folks like John McCain who have this to say. He said this in a statement. The torture of detainees in U.S. custody during the last decade was one of the darkest chapters in American history. I would say that the reason why it was, I'm sorry, I have to comment on this, of course, it's what I do. I would say that the reason why it was one of the darkest chapters in American history, Mr. McCain, is because we had been hit with terrorist attacks on 9/11. And that's why we were doing what we were doing. See, one of the things you got to realize during the whole waterboarding controversy is the time and the place and what was going on during the time that we were waterboarding. We just had seen 9/11, you know, Twin Towers and airplanes flying into the towers, the Pentagon, you name it. So we know that we had just been hit with an attack and we were trying to prevent future attacks. And so to try and hold Gina Haspel responsible for what she did way back in 2002 at this black site in Thailand is incredibly unfair because it was policy at the time to do this. And she's still in the CIA today. Anyway, John McCain, the torture of detainees in U.S. custody during the last decade was one of the darkest chapters in American history. Ms. Haspel needs to explain the nature and extent of her involvement in the CIA's interrogation program during the confirmation process. Lindsey Graham, of course, a South Carolina Republican, telling CNN she is a highly qualified person. He says that was waterboarding and so forth. That was an authorized program at the time. That's now no longer legal. He says the problem I would have is if she somehow tried to suggest that you could still do that. And so this is going to be something that is going to be, I think, one of the more interesting confirmation processes ever. Now, the New York Times reported in February of 2017 about Haspel's role overseeing the interrogation of two detainees at a prison in Thailand in 2012, including one detainee who was waterboarded 83 times in a single month. Now, I don't know if they eventually got anything out of that guy, but torture's not funny. Now, here's the interesting thing. We all know Dianne Feinstein. And the Feinstein Report, you remember all that? When she came out with this massive 6,000-page report on the Bush-era interrogation programs? Dianne Feinstein apparently is willing to give this woman the benefit of the doubt, Gina Haspel. She says, and again, she was Senate Intelligence Chairwoman in 2014 for the committee's massive 6,000-page report on interrogation programs, has some praise for Haspel on Tuesday. Yesterday, though, as she says, she is not going to decide on her nomination until after the confirmation hearing. But Feinstein says, listen, we've had a long personal talk. She spent some time with her. We had dinner together. We have talked. She says, everything I know is that she has been a good deputy director for the CIA. So Dianne Feinstein, clearly keeping an open mind. Senator Bill Nelson, Florida Democrat, defending Haspel's actions in Thailand, saying it was the accepted practice of the day and it should not disqualify her. His exact quote, after a 30-year professional, as a 30-year professional in the CIA, he's got a lot of comfort in the fact that they're putting someone in place who is indeed familiar with the agency. Virginia Senator Mark Warner, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee these days, said that he has a good relationship with Haspel as deputy director, but he noted that there are a number of legitimate questions that she will have to answer, and she will. She's got to answer about the waterboarding, which I think that is an open and shut. That's an open and shut conversation. Well, this was the standard practice of the day. It was accepted within the CIA, and that's what my job was, and so I did my job. Now, as far as the destroying of the records and all that kind of stuff, that is something that she ultimately will have to answer to. But also, and you folks know that I'm a big supporter of the veterans and of the VA, it looks like President Trump is on the verge of replacing VA Director Shulkin with Rick Perry. Now, David Shulkin, I said this from the very beginning. And I don't like to be the guy who says, oh, I was right. I was right. But I was right about this guy, David Shulkin. When President Trump announced that this guy who was a leftover, a holdover, if you will, from the Obama administration VA, you know, the same VA that just absolutely imploded under Obama. I was a little disappointed. Actually, I was a lot disappointed that President Trump at the time tapped Shulkin as VA secretary. And this guy has been, you know, I guess he's done a few things right, but he's essentially been a train wreck. Shulkin has faced several investigations over his travel and leadership of the VA. But until now, President Trump has been, you know, supportive of this guy. But now we know that because he has had one controversy after another, David Shulkin has, that the president, he says, you know, Rick Perry may be the guy for this job. As a matter of fact, the president had lunch with Perry on Monday to apparently talk about just this. Now, Perry has long been, as you know, or maybe you don't, but Perry is an Air Force pilot, was an Air Force pilot, and he's always been somebody who has been incredibly supportive and a major advocate for the veterans. And I think way back when, I even thought that Perry would have been a very good pick for a VA secretary. So RedState.com has documented some of the problems that David Shulkin has faced. There was one big public dispute last month following a scathing report by the departments, the veterans, the VA, their department's inspector general on a business trip that Shulkin took to Britain and Denmark last year. The report found serious derelictions related to the trip and concluded that the secretary spent much of it sightseeing and improperly accepted a gift of Wimbledon tickets. And so now I think what was happening is, I think the president is just ready to make changes. And I think that this is a guy, this is a president who is not afraid clearly of change. He is also a president not afraid of what other people are going to say about the fact that he has replaced one staffer after another on his staff. I mean, good Lord, when you go down the number of people that have left the Trump administration for whatever reason, I think what the president has learned over the past year is who he can trust and who he can't trust and who he wants to work with and who he does not want to work with. Now, for Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who I wasn't here yesterday, but we know that he has now been fired. He apparently learned it, learned of his termination, maybe via Twitter, although there is word that John Kelly spoke to him on Friday. Whatever the case may be, we knew almost immediately that Tillerson and President Trump were not on the same page. Now, you can say, well, yeah, it was maybe perhaps a bad hire to begin with, because for President Trump, again, realize when he was elected, he was not a politician. He wasn't somebody who had years and years and years and decades of experience dealing with politicians and inside the Beltway politics. And so he was, I would say, unsure of how to assemble a staff. And he didn't have a lot of people around to help him. Now, you could say that that is President Trump's fault at the time, but whatever the case may be, Rex Tillerson clearly was not on the same page with President Trump on North Korea, on the Iranian nuclear deal, to name just two. And so if you're a guy who is in the shoes of President Trump and you're trying to do you're trying to execute a certain agenda, you don't need your own people, say, for example, Rex Tillerson, you don't need them working against you. And so the president did what the president had to do, and he terminated Rex Tillerson. Now, of course, Mike Pompeo is going to be perhaps probably the new Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. You know what's amazing is for all of the, and you remember this, you remember all of the controversy surrounding Tillerson and his nomination by President Trump, and how everybody said that this guy was nothing but a puppet of the Russians. I mean, for the love of God, man, it was such a controversial move. Now you look back, and the same people who were blasting, this is what I find kind of funny, right? Because the whole mainstream media, their heads were melting over Rex Tillerson because, again, he was a friend, apparently, of Vladimir Putin and all these other things. And so now those same people that were incredibly critical of Tillerson way back when are now shedding tears because the president has indeed fired Rex Tillerson. And it is, again, it's all about North Korea. It's all about the Iranian nuclear deal and the fact that he and President Trump, and we've been talking about this for a long time, about how those two most certainly do not agree on what is the path forward. Now, somehow I believe that Tillerson is going to be okay, but I got to tell you, the some of the various media outlets, they're now documenting all of the people that have left the Trump administration over the past year. And it is, I mean, it is a long list. You, of course, have Rex Tillerson. You have Gary Cohn. You have Hope Hicks. You have Rob Porter. You have, of course, Scaramucci. You have Rex Priebus, Sean Spicer, James Comey. It goes on and on and on. But I think that it's important to note, as the president continues to move forward in the second year now of his first administration, of his first term, that he is surrounding himself now with people who he feels like he can trust and he feels like he can work with. So while a lot of people are saying that the number of people who are departing the Trump administration is a bad thing, I could make the argument that it is a good thing. Yes, Pamela.
You can't say Scaramucci straight.
Scaramucci. I can't.
I mean,
I just can't.
I realized I was laughing and you're doing your monologue, but I couldn't help it. You can't.
I've tried. Can I tell you, I was having dinner with a friend of mine the other day, and he and I were talking about Trump and all this, and I did. I threw down Scaramucci's name, and I said it like that. And he says, can you just stop with the radio shtick? I said, it's not radio shtick. I literally cannot say the guy's name without doing this.
You programmed your brain.
My brain is programmed in so many different ways.
By the way, and I don't mean to change the subject, but this is going on right now. And in light of all the school walkouts, Nicholas Cruz is in court right now. It is a hearing on, he's being arraigned on the charges of first-degree attempted murder for the 17 people who were injured in the shooting is the way this is reading. He has not held up his head. I'm watching this. His head has been held completely down this entire time.
Right.
He is surrounded by no less than five security guards behind him, the way I can count. Not to mention the security guards are at one side of the row and security guards at the other side of the row. So, I mean, I'm assuming they're thinking parents could end up showing up and wanting to hurt him. Which if I were a parent, I would,
oh,
I would
absolutely.
Want to.
Are you kidding?
So, I mean, he is surrounded by security. And right now the attorneys, I guess they're trying to figure out how they're going to get paid. And they're trying to determine the definition of indigent because
he's got that $800,000.
Well, he has money, but yeah. It's stuck and it's stuck in probate court. And they anyway, so they're trying to they're discussing a lot of that, a lot of legalese and that sort of stuff right now. But he is sitting in court and. Yeah, he is. I don't know if it's remorse or he's just not right
well,
in the head.
I don't think he's right in the head. But what I would say is there's a couple of things. Thank you, Pamela. I think there's a couple of things. One is let's not forget that what they're trying to do right now is they're trying to influence future jurors. So part of what I'm sure that his attorneys have told him is you really need to act remorseful when you're in court. So that's one. Two, the conversation about whether or not he's indigent, he does have an $800,000 inheritance. And so the question is, should he have a right to...
Listen, I don't want to interrupt the show.
Yeah. It's Michael Del Giorno, everyone.
But I do want everyone to know that it's a great Dan Mann to start for 51 minutes. I've been listening in the other room. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
But keep it down. There's a national broadcast going on down the hall.
Thank you, Michael.
Now national talk show host Walk is leaving the room.
There you go. And there he goes. Michael, I'll be sure and make you some very good.
Did he flip you off?
He did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what we need to do? We need to film Michael doing the old-time talk show host Walk and post that on the Facebook page because it's funny as all get out. It really is. And as Michael goes on to do what he's going to do, filling in for Dr. Michael Savage, I'll let him know that I have made some official nationally syndicated talk show host coffee. So if he would like some, I believe that it should now be ready. Where were we? Oh, that $800,000. Yeah, so they're trying to figure out with Nicholas Cruz, is he actually indigent with this $800,000 that, as you say, Pamela, rightly so, is he indigent? When will that $800,000 be released to him?
Well, see, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, will it be – was it 21 before he could get a hold of it? I mean, there are all kinds of questions on that $800,000.
And here's the other question is, okay, so that $800,000, I'd be willing to bet that a lot of these families who lost loved ones and the people that have been injured, they could sue him.
Sure.
I would think.
And I think they also mentioned that he's been named in 3 lawsuits that have been filed. So they're probably civil lawsuits to do just that. I don't know that, but that's what they were discussing in court.
Yeah, and it is interesting, too, because there were some guards inside of the prison that he was being held in who said that he has requested a Bible, but he's also very effusive. He's very energetic when he's in prison. He's laughing. He's talking to folks and everything else. And so his persona in court, to me, is obviously different than his persona inside the prison, which tells me that, again,
well, you're not going to be sitting there.
Cynical, but well, I think the guy is more than likely putting on a show. That's my 2 cents.
I think he's a little too far gone to be that. I don't know.
Calculating?
You're not going to, regardless of anything, you're not going to be sitting there in court laughing your butt off like you would be in jail, regardless of who you are. Call it calculating or just call it, you know, just not being stupid. Mm-hmm. That would be really dumb on his part to do that.
Well, obviously, yeah, the judge would admonish him so hard and fast.
But I'm saying, I know, but what I'm saying is, who is the real Nicholas Cruz? The one that's cutting up in jail, or the one that has his head bowed and he's trying to portray that as a broken human being?
Well, I have no sympathy for him. I have empathy. I don't have sympathy because he did what he did. However, probably in jail, his coping skills just are automatically taking over, and he's trying to survive, knowing full well he's probably going to be executed. I mean, they're looking for the death penalty. He will probably be executed. So he's trying psychologically to survive, and the only way he knows how to survive is to be diabolical and, you know, what's the word you use? Maniacal? That's not the word.
Maniacal.
Thank you. he's trying to do all of those things just to, you know, so he's not suicidal.
I get it. 1254 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mendes Show.